The circle calls us into wholeness, completion, inclusion, the cycle of life, the universe, and eternity. Circles are natural, a physical phenomena. Our DNA, the codex, the secret of our being consists of interlocking circles or spirals stacked on top of each other. The mystery of who we are, the worlds in our fingertips, the irises of our eyes, our cells, and the egg that gave us life. Circles and more circles, the circle of our interconnected lives, our round Mother Earth that circles the sun, the great circle of light that makes life possible. We need circles. Where would we be without wheels? We need the oh of surprise and delight, the embrace that encircles us in love, holding us with tender care. Come this morning into the circle of love. Come help enlarge our bold model of love. Come open your heart, open your mind to fortify and to be fortified for the ever-expanding possibility of universal love that brings forth justice and its peace that widens into a full circle. Welcome all into this wonderful circle of great human beings. We invite you this morning to move fully into what it might mean to live your life with the all-encompassing grace of the circle.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm Sue Prey, and in lighting the chalice, I wanted to read a poem to you, The Road Not Taken by Robert Frost in 1920. The reason it's important to me is it empowers me to be proud of not always following the crowd and taking a path that is not always the common choice of others. Here is the line that really resonates with me. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. And now I'll read the whole thing. Okay. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth, then took the other as just as fair and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear, though for that passing there had worn them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves, no step had trodden back. Oh, I kept the first for another day. Yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference.
Let us stand as you are able and sing our opening hymn, O Come, Emmanuel.
Comfort to all exiles here, and
I draw your attention to the announcements in our order of service and invite all members and those interested to stay afterwards for the vote on declaring our support of marriage equality. Ours is a welcoming community where we find connection, a loving community where we find meaning. Ours is a sharing community where our sorrows are lessened. We take this moment to reflect on our joys and sorrows and acknowledge the mutual support of our community. If you would like, please share a brief verbal personal expression of a special joy or sorrow now.
Shirley Hobrock, membership chair. We have a joy that we have another new member, Jessica Sievers.
Good morning. I'm Elke Lorenz and bring greetings from Mary Westfall, who is a former member of this fellowship. She's currently in Manhattan. She would love to be back in Portland, but the flight situation in Dallas doesn't allow it. So anyway, she said to give everybody her best.
Stacey Brofman. My baby, my 21-year-old, who through some poor choices and some bad luck had not gone to college yet. And yesterday I heard the best words out of her mouth ever, and it was, "Mom, this is a list of the things I need for school."
Kalina Stanton and Stuart and I have joy and concerns. We're starting on an adventure. We're going to try the dual living. We're going to Montana where there's snow and the temperature was sub 22. But that's a joy because Stuart's going to ski. So wish us well. We've already met the UUs there, and that's a joy. So.
Great. And we'll be back. Back for April flowers.
May we remember those who have spoken, those they have named, and those we hold in silence in our hearts. All right, Sandy.
And everyone
morning. Is this on? Ooh. I'm having my phone out because it has my notes in it in case I forget what to say. Isn't that cool that I don't have to have a piece of paper? Oh, except I do. Ooh. Oh, so many things to keep track of. Here. What do I have here?
Let me...
What do I have here? Go ahead, hold them. Go ahead, you can hold them. Rings? We'll call them, you can look at them. We'll call them wedding rings. Okay? Yeah, that's a wedding ring. It's, you can keep, or well, you can hang on to it for now. Yes, they're wedding rings. Have you ever been married?
No.
No? Have you ever been married? No. Well, I've been married. And when I got married, I got to make that decision all by myself. Nobody told me I had to get married, and nobody told me I couldn't get married. And for a decision that's that important, I thought that was an important decision, at least. And I think that's pretty cool that I'm the one who got to make that decision. So after I got married, I went on honeymoon. Anybody know what a honeymoon is? Yeah. I'd have to agree with that. Yeah? Where you go on a trip after you get married. It's basically, it's a vacation. And it's typically a vacation without children, and it kind of makes it a nice vacation. At first. So on our honeymoon, we drove from Manhattan to California, and we drove. It was a summer vacation, so it was hot. And our car was a VW bus, and it didn't have air conditioning. It was the Ularix old car, and although we bought it from Jim Converse. But anyway, for anybody who remembers the Ularix and Jim Converse. And it didn't have air conditioning, and it was hot. And we drove in Kansas. And in Kansas in the summer, it's very hot. And we drove, and we got to Goodland, and we got gas, and we got through Colorado, and it was so hot. Oh, my God, it was hot. And I'm from California, so I don't really like hot weather that much. So we got through Colorado, and, you know, a VW bus, well, it doesn't really like the mountains very much. Well, it doesn't like highways on the mountains very much. We got to Grand Junction, Colorado, and that's like the end of Colorado. And, you know, it was really hot. Have I mentioned that it was really hot? It was so hot that it wasn't just me that was hot, but even my fingers were sweaty. Now, that's hot. When your fingers are uncomfortably sweaty, that's really hot. And I just got married, and I had this wedding ring on my finger that was, frankly, kind of uncomfortable. So I was very careful. Can I have one of those rings? I was very careful. And I took my wedding ring, and very carefully, because, you know, wedding ring is kind of a big deal. I put it in a tissue, and I very carefully wrapped it up. Very carefully wrapped it up and stuck it away in my purse. We'll call this my purse for right now. Because, you know, a wedding ring is kind of important. It's a big deal. It's a symbol. And I wanted to take care, very careful care of it. Well, so then we got through Colorado. And you know what? I was actually very uncomfortable, not just because it was hot, but also because I had this horrible cold. And I was blowing my nose. Oh God. I was blowing my nose so much in the car. Have you ever blown your nose so much that you just, and when you're sick and you've got tissues like just all over everywhere, because you don't throw them away and then your mom or your dad comes in and says, oh my God, put all those tissues in the trash. We say that a lot at our house. So there were tissues like in the car, and they were just coming out of everywhere. They were coming out of my pockets, and they were coming out of the glove compartment, and they were just on the floor. And you know why we didn't have a trash can in that car? I don't know, but we didn't. And I'm sure we bought one soon after that. But anyway, there were tissues everywhere. So we got through Colorado, and at the end in Grand Junction, we decided we would stop and get gas and let the engine cool down, because it was a VW bus and you had to do that. So, in Grand Junction, Colorado, you know what I did? I threw away all those tissues because they were a mess and they were boogery and icky. And so, help me here. So, boogery? Yeah, well, not according to my Word document, but okay, so I threw all the tissues away. And they were all gone, and then we drove on through Utah, and we took Highway 50, which is not a good idea with a VW bus, because the roads go like this, and it was terrible. But we persevered. We were young and foolish. We went on and on and on, and we got through Utah, and we got through Nevada, and, you know, we were in the middle of nowhere, Nevada. I mean, nowhere. I even looked on the map this morning to see if I could figure out the name of the town that we were in. And there wasn't even a name on the road. I mean, there was nothing in Nevada.
But we saw for gas somewhere, and that's when it hit me. All those tissues that I'd thrown away. Empty. My wedding ring that I had very carefully wrapped in tissue had gotten thrown away in the gas station 500 very hilly miles back in Colorado. Now that ring, you know, that was a wedding ring. Oh my gosh, the wedding rings are kind of a big deal. They're very important, very symbolic. This is what Black Elk and Ogallala, I was close, Sue had to say about rings and circles and how important that symbol is. Everything, he says, the power of the world does is done in a circle, like a ring. That's right, a ring, a circle. The sky is round. And I've heard that the earth is round like a ball, and so are the stars, and the wind in its greatest power swirls like a circle, and birds make their nests in circles, for theirs is the same religion as ours, and the sun comes forth and goes down again in a circle. Even the seasons form a great circle in their changing and always come back again to where they were. Life is a circle from childhood to childhood, and so it is in everything where power moves. Now that, I mean, that wedding ring that went into the trash back in Grand Junction, Colorado, it was tied to the earth and the stars and the moon and all the planets and the universe and this humongous circle of life. Cue Lion King. Okay. So, oh my gosh. And I had just thrown it away. Just thrown it away. What do you think? Was I still married? I just threw it away. I was still married? Of course. That's right. Of course I was still married. Because it was just a little ring. It was just a symbol. It didn't mean that much. And so, you know what? Rings and circles are amazing things. I broke it. That's right. I broke that circle. But, you know, circles, they can get bigger. They can grow. And so when we got to California, I found another ring that was sort of similar. It was cloisonné. It was red. It was about the same. It's actually better because it was flat instead of rounded. And I bought it instead. And the truth was, that ring was only $10. I bought it at Campbell's. This ring in California was double the price, but it was still a ring. And so, you know, that was cool. I could, the ring, it accommodated things. It was not that big a deal. I still had a ring, still symbolized my marriage. It was great. But, you know, truth is, it turned out that ring was kind of uncomfortable, even in the wintertime. It didn't have anything to do with it being hot and sweaty in summer. And so I ended up not wearing it very long and ended up buying another one. It was abalone, and it kind of got pale after a while. I thought it would be pretty, but it wasn't. And so I bought another one, and it was gold, and it had a blue line around it, but it's really cheap. I think it was like $2 for it. And so I didn't like it very much, but I was kind of set on the gold and the blue thing, and so I found one finally that was made out of lapis. It actually turned out to be silver, but that's okay. And so rings are, circles are kind of flexible, and this one is what? That's blue, yeah. So, you know, rings can symbolize a lot of things and grow if you need them to grow, contract if you need them to contract. You know what? You can actually keep that. You can, because, you know, it's just a ring. So, what do you think? Rings, good things. What's another symbol that we have that we think is a pretty big deal symbol that has rings in it? Us, you use. Yeah? What is it? The candle. That powerful chalice light. And it has, what does it have around it? Big circle. My favorite has two circles. It's kind of cool. Think of that. Think of the power of the circle. That's what I want you guys to think about as we sing out. The power of the circle and how it reconnects when broken. It gets a little bigger. Just add a few more rings to the
whole bunch. What do you think? Good idea? Works for me.
Now is the time for our Helping Hands offertory, and whoever is going to be doing that presentation, would they come forward? Thank you, Melissa.
Good morning, Circle of Friends. As a community, we'd like to support the Manhattan Emergency Shelter. The Social Action Committee has designated this Sunday as a collection for the Christmas Support Program. We have two families, single-parent families, who otherwise wouldn't have a Christmas. So I'm hoping that you will consider them part of your family and make a donation today so that they can enjoy the circle around the Christmas tree.
I didn't know I was next. Well, this is a funny thing. Michael asked me to write a talk a little bit about some of the backgrounds and circles kind of things in our relationships, our ebbs and flows and things like that, and connect it up with the larger world. And I did that, and I thought I wrote something really good, but I lost it. So then this morning I wrote up something else. It wasn't quite as good, and I thought, that'll be great, and I pulled it out of there, and it's gone too. So now I'm on to the rough notes, which actually may be better. The 70s. We had these fevered talks that went on until the sun came up, talking about everything that you couldn't talk about with people. We made plans. We thought about our futures. And that ended in these words to Michael from me: "You have no right to ruin my life." What was I thinking? I guess I was thinking of being arrested in a gay bar sting, of our crime and not hiding well enough, of being shamed by some arrest, a record to be scrutinized by some bar community in the future for moral turpitude, an impediment to a job. The news we heard back then was not good, not about gay people. They were not hired. They were fired. They were evicted. They were convicted. Their children were removed. They were not allowed to adopt. It was the end of even the most distinguished military career. Oscar Wilde, the purges of the 50s, books suppressed. He's and she's moved around and changed in Whitman, in many other writers. Forbearance, really, that's all we asked for back then, just forbearance. We knew the law was bad. Just forbear for a while with us. Let us go. And and that's not very much to live for. And many people chose another route at that point. The 80s came. We were still in some kind of connection. I was growing stronger. We began to have more to live for. We weren't together then, but we thought about it. AIDS existed, that huge, indifferent, bureaucratic manslaughter. But somehow, even so, I found the courage. And Michael found whatever it was necessary for him to be able to listen to me, because it wasn't easy to listen to me after those harsh words. We reconnected. We slowly came into the light, became visible, joint bank accounts. Having a single room. Instead of the old way where we go into a hotel and they say, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir, we only have one king bed," and we had to put on the act. Oh, well, we'll just have to deal with it. Those kind of crazy little lies that you have to do. We came visible enough to let Fred Phelps come into our lives, and he did for a little while. We moved together through life, and we both grew stronger. Our relationship grew stronger. It survived difficulties that relationships have to survive. And now here it is, like 2013. The circle of our life together, it's going to have to, for a moment, serve as our wedding rings. It's invisible, but even so, it's here. Marriage kind of forms an enclosure into which you bring your life and those things that are important in your life. You let people in, you escort people out. The enclosure, though, is the marriage. And that's a ring, and that's a circle. So thanks for listening to my story.
Full circle. In a circle of trust, the line of communication cannot be broken. I love circles, the roundness of tree trunks, each of its rings that counts another year all the way into the heartwood, the roundness of arteries and veins, the passageways for our blood flow. I love blueberries and lingonberries. When I paint, I find myself returning over and over again to circles. One can go round and round and round, orbiting too fast around an idea, an issue, a theme, an incident. You can't get it out of your mind. It's just spinning out of control. So not all circles are healthy. Not all circles work to bring you into your fullest potential. What creates the right velocity, the right rate of turning? Ballet involves a lot of turning. What allows a dancer to spin and spin without losing their balance is the trick of finding a place on the wall that you always return to. So, well, I can't do it anymore. But so that you can go around and around and you find your center of gravity. You keep fixed on that point so you stand upright and you can move with grace and speed. In order to spin at a high rate of speed, you need to know your center of gravity, your center of attention. In living a full life, one needs to know what is central to their mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual health. something that fixes their attention, our attention, and has the power to bring you round and around into full understanding, a full giving of the self, so that one can live a well-rounded life. How do circles impact your life? What brings ripe roundness to your days and weeks and months and years? Vasily Kandinsky, born in Moscow, Russia, in 1866, became one of the 20th century's most influential painters. But he went to the university to study law and economics. And at the university, he taught law and economics. But something shifted in him at the age of 30, and he said to himself, something said to him within, it was not enough. So he moved to Germany where he studied painting. And before he studied painting, he was one of those people who said, why can't people paint a chair that looks like a chair? It should be an exact replica. Every detail should be in place. You should be able to look at that chair and say, it's that chair, not an impression of a chair, a wild disbursement of a chair flying through the sky. It should be accurate. It should be something we can all recognize as that chair. But as he began to study painting, that absolute sense of what was right began to dissolve. This is the power of creation. It asks you always to move a little bit further than you're comfortable with. And he began to think and feel, and he remembered at the age of 3, the very first memory he had was of colors. He saw this very particular shade of green. He saw a monumental blue and ochre, and these things had deep resonance, and they brought him deeper into what he was trying to figure out as an artist, as a human being. He loved music. He absolutely adored music. It moved him deeply. He was inspired by its sheer intensity. Kandinsky viewed music as the most transcendent form of non-objective art. Musicians could evoke images in listeners' minds merely with sounds. He strove to produce similar object-free, spiritually rich paintings that alluded to sounds and emotions through a unity of sensation. He wrote, color is the key, the eye is the hammer, the soul is the piano with its many chords. The artist is the hand that, by touching this or that key, sets the soul vibrating automatically. Painting was above all a deeply spiritual practice for Kandinsky. He sought to convey profound spirituality and depth of human emotion through a universal visual language of abstract forms that transcended cultural and physical boundaries. It was his way of communing his inner sense of necessity, that thing that drove him to continue to find what was true, what was real, what would be something that could reach other people with the power of music to tell them that they too could be a part of creation. They too could be someone who is a co-creator, could help create a better world through going into the abstraction, into the essence of things. It wasn't the form, it was the essence he really worked at communicating. And he ended up being known as the father of abstract art. So for someone who started out with a very concrete and linear mind and loved that world, he never denied that world, He found he needed to balance it with an internal search to find the essence of color and its ability to communicate across all cultural boundaries, a universal reaching out, a tremendous thing. He wrote in the book, he wrote, concerning the spiritual and art, the work comes into the world at an undetermined hour, from a source still unknown, but it comes inevitably, suffering, searching, tormented souls, deeply sundered by the conflict between spirit and matter. Discovery, the part that is living in both animate and inanimate nature. Soulless is the phenomena, the outer, the inner, anticipation of joy, the call. To speak of mystery in terms of mystery, is this not content? Is this not the conscious and unconscious goal of the compelling urge to create? Not everyone feels the compulsion to paint, to play the piano, sing, or sculpt, or be known as one of those people who talk abstractly, who go in circles around ideas instead of straight at them with a power of linear, articulate thinking. What is it that sets you orbiting around larger truths that compel you to give of yourself? Give from the truest place in you. What is it that sets you whirling in your own kind of ecstasy, willing to share your fascination, your need to contribute with conviction and clarity and abandonment? We all mourn the loss of Nelson Mandela, a man who spent almost three decades in jail because he believed in doing everything he could do to liberate his people from the oppression of the white minority. When he was released, he left without bitterness or hatred, ready and willing to reconcile with those who had imprisoned him. After being in jail for a couple of years in 1964, he and I think seven other of his cohorts in the operation to liberate South Africa, they were on trial. And he wrote a speech that took 176 minutes to deliver, to defend himself. It took 2 weeks to write the speech. A white lawyer who reviewed a draft explained, if Mandela reads this in court, they will take him straight out to the back of the courthouse and hang him up. Mandela's own lawyer urged him to cut out the final paragraph. But Mandela held firm. Quote, I felt we were likely to hang no matter what we said, so we might as well say what we truly believed. Mandela recalled in his autobiography, Long Walk to Freedom, the final lines of Mandela's 60-page, 176-minute statement, which has since become his most famous words. During my lifetime, I have dedicated my life to the struggle of the African people. I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against black domination. I have cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all persons will live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an ideal for which I am hope to live for and to see realized. But, my Lord, we want equal political rights because without them, our disabilities will be permanent. I know this sounds revolutionary to the whites in this country because the majority of voters will be Africans. This makes the whites, the white man, fear democracy. He kept a fixed point, his eye on what was most important. Now, he is someone that we should all try to understand in the way that he was able to keep his focus even when he had suffered the worst humiliations on what was most important. Now, how many times in the week do you get miffed over something small and slight and say, I'm not going to talk to her? Or, forget it, I'm not doing that. Remember, if you're going to live a full and round life, you have to have a fixed point that keeps you focused, your heart focused. Well, we all might think that everyone loved Nelson Mandela in this country for a very long time, but it wasn't until 2008, when the U.S. officially considered Mandela not a terrorist. Before that, everybody from South Africa was considered a terrorist. It was Condoleezza Rice who said, this is a total embarrassment. We've got to stop this nonsense. And so John Kerry, a senator at that time, proposed legislation. It passed in the House and the Senate. And thus, South Africa was no longer deemed a terrorist state. And Nelson Mandela was no longer a terrorist. So, in Mother Jones recently, it talks about this wonderful little kind of circle that connects to the circles I'm trying to create here. Last February, activists pitched a fit when it was announced that for a second consecutive year, the gay Republican group, Go Proud, GOP Proud, would be a co-sponsor of Washington's biggest right-wing confab, the Conservative Political Action Conference. The Heritage Foundation and Senator Jim DeMint both skipped the event in protest. That came a year after Ryan Sorba, a chairman of California Young Americans for Freedom, delivered an epic rant against GOP Proud at CPAC's main stage. In July, the American Conservative Union, which puts on the conference, bowed to complaints and informed the GOP Proud group that this year they would not be invited back in 2012. CPAC isn't so discerning about who the rest of their co-sponsors are, though. As Right Wing Watch notes, one of the co-sponsors at February's conference will be Youth for Western Civilization, a group dedicated, as the name suggests, at preventing the extinction of Western civilization at the hands of multiculturalism. At the hands of multiculturalism. Per its mission statement, the group boasts that in spite of the continual assault and hatred it endures from the radical left, we wish to revive the West rather than see our civilization be sent to the graveyard of history. They went on to say, men like Nelson Mandela, who are regularly featured as grandfatherly figures by the liberal media, are in reality bloodthirsty terrorists. Now let's review Nelson Mandela's position on gay rights. He led South Africa to become the first country on the continent to ban anti-gay discrimination. Mandela was a vocal supporter of anti-discrimination protections from the very beginning of his presidency in 1994. He was a leader for marriage equality well before it was popular. 20 years ago, he was advocating for the right for same-sex couples to marry. As a result, South Africa became the first country in Africa and the fifth in the world to recognize marriage equality. He put his words into action. Mandela didn't just pay lip service to LGBT issues. He was willing to appoint gay people to high positions at a time when the country was far less accepting. Among his early appointees was Edwin Cameron, who has risen to become a judge on South Africa's highest court. By comparison, how many openly gay justices are on the U.S. Supreme Court? He was truly a noble man. He taught that the only truly prevailing counterbalance to violence and hatred is steadfast love. This is a love that is devoted to the long haul, not short-term alliances, you know, these little agreements you make that you know you're going to break in the future because then you'll get this. No. Long-term thinking. A vision of what the world can be. Charles and I have been figuratively and literally lost many times in the 40 years we have known one another. It is something of a miracle that our relationship survived and has come full circle. There were times when I told myself and Charles that I never wanted to see him again. I could not abide his inability to love me openly and fully. Of course, I'm this kind of crazy optimist thinking everything's all right, there's going to be no problems. I wasn't pursuing a career in law. I didn't understand in my heart at the time the sacrifices that he had to make to say, you have no right to ruin my life. I carried that as a flag that I flew at every instance when we would argue. I said, you said this. And now I understand it's not so simple. It's not easy. In 1998, when we were staying in the hills where Lascaux, that those caves where the wonderful cave paintings are found, we took a walk around 6:30 on an October evening. It was just glorious. We took these ancient trails through the hilly forest, and we just were in heaven, it seemed like, looking over valleys and over these incredible old ruins. And then it started to become dark. And you know how when things are in broad daylight, that's where we're at. This is what we're doing. But as things get more muffled and the light diminishes, those signposts disappear. They merge into a darkness. And this trail was not a walking trail. It was just a trail that had sometimes every 20 feet holes like this. We had shorts on. We had t-shirts on. And by 9:30, we were both freezing, and we were both incredibly lost. We had gone to the farm with the terrorist dogs that wanted to rip at our throats, and we had gone the opposite direction, and we had gone this direction, and we kept on holding one another's hand. And then one of us would say, let's try this, and the other would say, let's try this. And then Charles, the logical thinker, said, let's put a big branch across every path we've been down so we know we won't go down that path again. And finally, after 4.5 hours of racing around in the dark, freezing, scratched, we're lucky we didn't break our necks, we found that little gate that went into the little village where our little house was. And something like that happened just yet again at Yosemite when we went to look at the half dome at Glacier Point and that incredible range of mountains. So beautiful, you get lost. You get lost in its beauty. And as we pulled out of the parking lot, dusk was settling. And we took a wrong turn. And for about 45 minutes, we could not, for the life of us, figure out where we were going. And I kept on thinking, oh my, what are we going to do? And then I remembered that what we do is that when we're lost, we help each other. We support each other. When one is ready to give up, the other says, no, let's go this way. Let's choose a path and stick with it. And that's what we did. And that's when I knew I could marry him with full faith. Because I know that when I am lost, he will hold my hand and he will help me find my way back into my fullness, into my ability to be present and loving and real. It's a full circle for us. We have found our way. And we thank each of you for your help and your support and your good wishes. When I read that card that was wrote on the same day we were getting married on November 17th that many of you here signed, I thought, oh, just a card. And then I started reading. And I was so surprised at how touching it was. For you to help us celebrate our love. So we are blessed by this larger circle. And today we ask you to stand up with us and say to Kansas, marriage equality is a civil right. So thank you. Thank you very much. Let us now sing our closing hymn, which is by Anna Akhmatova, who is a contemporary of Kandinsky's. So, and it's got wonderful lyrics. So let us sing with love. See? up off the tree with a little bright. In my ease and comfort, in my good news and light. These closing words from Desmond Tutu: my humanity is bound in yours, for we can only be human together. So let us do that.